This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebon Udana. Could President Trump's changes to federal policy hurt Connecticut's endangered species?
If New York does something that would say have an impact on what happens in Connecticut, we as Connecticut would not really have the ability to say, hey, New York, stop doing that. But the feds would.
That's Jen Ellen Spiegel, the Connecticut Mirror's regular freelance environment and energy reporter. She's investigated how President Trump's changes to federal policy could affect endangered species in Connecticut. More to come after this.
Whether you order a grinder or a hero for lunch, spend summers on the Sound or on Jones Beach, and I'm not even going near the pizza debate, there's something for nutmeggers and Long Islanders alike on the WSHU podcast, After All Things. Get the news and culture from around the Long Island Sound in less than 15 minutes. Hosted by me, Sabrina Garone. Weeknights wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Jan. Let's start with the Endangered Species Act. It was passed during the Nixon administration in 1973. Could you explain what the law does and how President Trump wants to change that? You've used the situation of the piping plover in Connecticut, for example.
Broadly, it set up a structure for protecting species that were at risk for some sort of difficulty, whether it's a threat to their habitat or just an overall threat or endangerment that might be visited upon them by development or drilling or, you know, fill in the blank there. One of the things over time that has proven to be one of the biggest factors in terms of threats to wildlife, and I should say parenthetically, we're talking mammals, birds, insects, amphibians, fish, marine mammals, marine fish, and we are talking plants. So we're talking about a lot of things here.
So pretty much what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does and the National Marine Fisheries Service does, right?
Yes, National Wildlife Service does and National Marine Fisheries does. They kind of jointly run this, although National Wildlife Service has most of it. What the Trump administration is endeavoring to do is something that they actually signaled in Project 2025 they were going to do. And as we've seen now, you know, they've followed Project 2025 pretty closely. They want to eliminate habitat as part of the definition of what it means to harm a species of any sort. And what that has raised all kinds of ire over is this is, as I, you know, indicated, this is what most folks see as the key factor in causing species harm, threaten, endangerment, you name it. An example here in Connecticut might be something like the piping plover, which we've all heard about, the small shorebirds that need a certain amount of shoreline that is above the tide line, that provides them with the kind of food they need, people to stay away from them.
And what we've been doing, we've been fencing off those areas, right? That's what a lot of those areas where they breed has been fenced off on the coastline in Connecticut.
It has been fenced off, but here's the thing. The habitat is still at risk, and the habitat in this particular case is at risk really from climate change, which has brought in sea level rise, stronger storms, and it's shrunk and shrunk and shrunk that habitat. So where will these guys go? There isn't enough room. One of the things I could see when I was at an area where they had some of these nests fenced off was you could see, it's just open fencing. You could see where the high tide line had come through the fencing. Well, sooner or later, as sea levels continue to rise, assuming the world, the U.S., doesn't take any, you know, really definitive action here, it's just going to overrun the habitat. Well, where will these birds go? And that's just, I mean, that's just a single issue of why habitat is important. I mean, going back years and years and years, if you think out west where the spotted owl fight over logging, and that was going to take away their habitat for nesting and everything else. Almost any species you can think of, habitat really plays a critical role. There are a few exceptions, but habitat is the big one.
But the Trump administration is drilling down on the word take. It says take means to capture, kill, trap. It doesn't mean protecting the habitat. How are they arguing this?
Well, in that list, you listed a few of the words in that list, but the key word is harm. And harm has been not just interpreted, but it's been litigated in the Supreme Court in the past to not just mean kill, but to harm them in other ways, one of which is loss of habitat or degradation of habitat. And that's what they're going after. It's the word harm in particular in that set of items related to the word take.
Okay, so if there are changes to the environment because of Trump administration policies, is there anything the state can do? What do we have as state protections for endangered species in Connecticut?
Connecticut, along with other states, but by no means lots of states, has its own Endangered Species Act in place. Whatever the Trump administration does, it'll have a tangential impact on what Connecticut decides to do, but it'll have some impact. But the state will not have to change its own laws. What our Endangered Species Act does is it lists gobs and gobs of species that it considers endangered, then a rung down threatened, or another rung down species of concern. And there are state regulations in place. Some shoreline towns in particular have some local zoning rules and other kinds of rules in place. But where you run into trouble is when you have species that sort of run in interstate ways. I mean, an example I was given is something called a bog turtle, which New York also has. Well, it's on the federal list. It's also on the state list. But if New York does something that would say have an impact on what happens in Connecticut, we as Connecticut would not really have the ability to say, hey, New York, stop doing that. But the feds would.
The environment doesn't respect state boundaries. The ecosystem.
No, and
the larger ecosystem. Most, yeah.
No, I mean, we're all in ecosystems and they interact in many different ways. And the habitat is one. Suppose the habitat is degraded to a point that whatever the species is can't live there. Well, if you're a freshwater fish or or a mussel that is in Connecticut, well, how do you move? It's fresh water. Now, if you're a marine mammal, you can move to cooler waters. If you're a bird, you can move. But, you know, the vegetation that you eat or the species in the water that you may eat or the insects that it may eat, will they move in time? These things have to sync up. I should also say we have an example here in Connecticut and throughout a lot of the Northeast of, you know, one type of animal that is definitely endangered that doesn't have to do with habitat. Those are bats, any number of types of bats. The state of Connecticut on its list has a whole mess of them. The feds for our area have two. They suffer from disease, something called white nose syndrome. They got plenty of habitat. But we have this disease that we haven't figured out a way to get rid of yet.
And the state of Connecticut wants some more species added to the federal list. What's happening with that?
Well, the big one here is something called a salt marsh sparrow. Again, this is habitat related, not unlike the piping plover. It nests way, way down in the salt marsh. The piping plover, their nests are a little bit higher, but salt marsh sparrows nest way, way down in the salt marsh. And if we're having even a full moon high tide or increased sea levels or a bad storm, those nests can wash out very easily and do. And the Center for Biological Diversity actually petitioned the federal government some time ago to add that to the federal list. They were told at the time, different administration, that Fish and Wildlife was going to add it. It never happened. The Center for Biological Diversity said to me, they really don't think the Trump administration will do anything on it unless the center takes the administration to court.
Bottom line is that Connecticut officials are trying to get local communities more involved. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? And is that an anecdote to what could possibly change on the federal level?
It can certainly help. What the Audubon Connecticut has done using its own foundation money the past couple of summers is coordinate with First Stratford this summer, Stratford and West Haven, to help train local officials on how to understand what's going on with the shorebirds and be cognizant of that if, you know, they notice something untoward at the beach. It builds on a lot of regulations that shoreline towns already have, really to protect people and the beaches themselves. Don't bring dogs on the beach, don't make fires on the beach, no ATVs on the beach. But Audubon Connecticut points out that these regulations, while they're good for people, also happen to be good for some of the wildlife. But police officers, for instance, who monitor this stuff may be, you know, completely uninformed of the regulations that are on the books and the issue of endangered species on the beaches. So if they see a fire on the beach, they would now know, well, if there's a fire on the beach, not only do I deal with the people who set the fire, but let me go check for the birds because it's nesting season.
Well, okay, well, thank you so much, Jan.
Happy to help.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebon Udana, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor. WSHU's Alicia Daddario and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts.